Welcome to the Scariest Things Podcast, episode 16. 16.
Sweet 16.
Sweet 16. Scariest Things Podcast is your gateway to the tropes and trends of the horror genre. And tonight, we are hipping you to the greatest animal pets gone wild in the horror film genre. Eric, what constitutes a pet gone wild film?
Well,
and why should we be afraid of Man's Best Friend?
Well, because it is exactly that. It's kind of like when we did the kids broadcast, where
right.
we
but kids are creepy.
Yeah, and
cats not so much.
And dogs, yeah, they're your best friend, but when they turn on you, it's like, oh, it's the betrayal.
Oh, they turn
and
they turn and then some.
And you know, I think it's that the human to pet bond. It can be as strong, if not stronger, than the parent to kid bond.
Have you ever been subject to an animal attack of any kind?
Yes.
Gopher, mongoose,
Amy's cat,
dog,
bit me.
Cat. Okay.
So that's like
a puncture wound.
Yeah, I drew blood.
Stitches?
No stitches.
Was the cat pissed? Did you deserve it?
No, I totally did not deserve it. I was petting the cat, and the cat
lied. You deserved it.
Well, I didn't deserve it that time. I probably deserved it any number of other times that I just pick up an animal that doesn't want to get picked up, and
sure.
Yeah, so then it's, you know,
errant mongoose.
Yeah, my karmic timing was up, and yeah, Ichi gave me a big old chomp.
But did you have any latent or obvious fears of animals prior to that?
No fears. I love animals. And although, you know, you do hear, I have a friend whose daughter got mauled by a neighborhood dog.
Okay.
And but they got over the hump. They got a dog themselves, and she loves that dog. But getting a dog biting your face,
That'll stick with you.
Bad news.
So, but what about non-domestic? I don't want to push us too far into a corner. What about non-domesticated animals?
Well, I went on safari.
Oh yes,
and
as did I.
Yeah, that's right. Right. So we
have different safaris.
So I've when we were walking in the bush and we found a lion pride
mm-hmm.
on foot. That was exciting.
Yeah.
They ran away.
Sure.
But every time you hear a... it's like, okay, I'll come a step back. I'll stand next to the guy with the rifle. there were some other things where it's like, don't get too close to the water because there's crocodiles in the water.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That makes, you know, certainly that gives you pause.
Yeah. I think it's the, you know what it is? I think it's the ultimate, it is sort of the ultimate unknown. It's you know, in the very truest sense of the word, it is animalism. Animalistic behavior. You don't exactly know. You can't rationalize with. You can't communicate. You can't plead for your life. All you can do is hope and pray that the beating will stop at some point.
Yeah, or yeah.
Whereas with a serial killer, maybe the serial killer has a soft spot. You know, maybe they're willing to listen to your final dying plea, but the animal, you know.
Although, actually, even in horror movies with animals,
uh-huh.
People will bargain with the animal. It's like, easy, boy.
Are we going to get there?
We're probably going to have to get there. I did have a jump scare moment. With an animal.
A real live animal. Jump scare animal moment.
I had... back when we were at the U of O, there was a serial rapist on campus.
This is getting dark real fast.
And it got spooky to the point where I was at my architecture studio and we would have to cross Franklin Boulevard to do our prints because we use the old Diazo blueprint machine and we didn't have one in our studio. And so the rule was, okay, if you're a woman going across the street, you should have a companion to go with you so that you don't get jumped because there's a crazy rapist out there. And so we were all on edge.
Uh-oh.
And
can I guess the animal before you say it?
Oh, well, you go ahead and get to guess the animal.
Canadian goose.
No.
Duck.
No, I was wandering across to bring my drawings over, and I had this big metal straight edge.
Uh-huh.
And a raccoon jumped out of the bushes.
Oh, they're nasty.
And I took a big swing. I just screamed like a little girl and started swinging wildly with my metal yardstick.
Nasty beasties.
Yeah, oh, God, I almost peed myself.
Nasty beasties. Yeah. I had a run-in with a raccoon. Raccoon had backed my cat into a corner in our backyard.
Oh.
And I thought, well, what's the quickest way to break the two up? You know, make some noise, make a loud sound. I'll take this baseball here in my hand and I will throw it as hard as I can against the fence. And that will shock the two of them. They will break up and they will scatter, go their independent ways. I took the baseball. I cocked it back. And I threw it, and I hit the raccoon right in the side. The raccoon shot up about 6 feet in the air.
So did the raccoon attack you?
The raccoon did not attack me. The raccoon, like, shot about a million miles in the air, and he beat feet. We avoided what could have been a terrifying and expensive vet bill with cat v. raccoon.
That wouldn't end well. I lost a cat to probably a possum or a raccoon. Found kitty under the rabbit hutch.
So, yes, to my point, raccoons are nasty beasts, and as are animals. Animals, you just don't know what you're going to get. You do not know what... Cat, dog, mongoose, shark, anaconda... You really don't know what you're
going to
do.
So I'm going to be throwing out domestic animals and you're going to throw Jaws at me?
Well, we said animals.
All right.
We said animals.
Okay.
So well, some are domesticated, some are not domesticated.
Spoiler alert, mine are domestic animals.
Yes. Spoiler alert, I have a mixed bag of animals.
Okay.
And who shouldn't?
So I guess I'll take my first of the fearsome foursome.
First of the fearsome foursome. Your number four is...
Okay, I'm dredging up something that I've mentioned in a previous episode.
Okay.
But it was such a memorable animal that I've got to bring it up again.
Okay.
And so it is
domesticated.
Domesticated animal. This is Black Phillip.
Oh, Black Phillip. Yeah. Scariest goat ever.
Scariest goat ever.
Do not mess with goats.
He's black. Black, and he's got big horns.
And he's a goat.
And he jumps sideways and acts kind of psychotic. And word was, so Black Phillip was played by this goat named Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Charlie was not a willing actor. And he would just go nuts on the set. And so a lot of the stuff that they filmed with Black Phillip was just Charlie just jumping around being unruly.
So this is the lack of animal wrangler.
I think that this is devoid of an
animal wrangler.
I thought that there was an animal wrangler who was doing an awesome job making that goat look really freaky.
But it's really quite the opposite.
And so the fearful look from the rest of the cast probably was, don't let that goat get too close to me. So, you know, there's something about goats, and I think that dates back to the little bit of research about goats and witches.
Yes.
And apparently goats and witches are not tied in English lore, but they are very much part of continental European lore. And so there was...
I thought you were going to say heavy metal, but...
Well, yes. And they had... It dates back to the Middle Ages. And,
sure.
The Knights Templar.
Oh, interesting.
And apparently Baphomet.
Ah, right.
Right? So it's the devil, right? And so it's the image of Baphomet is a man with a goat's head and wings. Yep. And holding fire.
It might have breasts.
Yeah, it's
weirdly.
Kinda, yeah,
it's a weird hodgepodge.
There is
a super weird hodgepodge of stuff.
A big, like, a, I don't know whether, do female goats have big horns? Because then you got a booby goat horn man woman thing.
Might have to research that one.
I don't know. That's
might it, have to research
makes
that one
just that much more day. Disturbing. Aleister Crowley then picked up the notion of spooky goats, and
oh, did he?
Yeah, well, Baphomet.
Oh,
so
sure.
So the whole notion of
right,
the,
yeah,
the devil,
Satanism, and yeah, witchcraft,
and so
and
that
black magic, that, and yeah.
So he spun it, and then H.P. Lovecraft, also his tales of the Whateley family. I think the Dunwich Horror. I think there's a bunch of goat man imagery.
Right.
The Shub Niggurath.
Just right.
All this, the goat of a thousand young. I mean, so people for ages have not trusted goats.
And it's like chocolate and peanut butter.
So Black Phillip, scariest goat to put the film.
Goats and witches.
He's the things that and eventually at the end of The Witch, spoiler alert.
Yes.
Kills off the dad.
Right. Oh, Black Phillip.
Black
Phillip.
Yeah. Just
grizzly.
Spears the dad.
Grizzly.
And then he talks to Thomason.
Right.
The daughter. So, anyways, supernatural goat. Is the goat a witch? Spooky goat.
Yes.
What's your number four?
My number four, going back to 1976, the tagline for this film, "This was the night of crawling terror." Squirm is an American horror film.
Oh, no.
The plot involves a small Georgia town that becomes inundated with flesh eating worms after a nasty, nasty storm in the southeast drops a huge power line down into the huge transformer drops onto the ground. And what happens?
To killing the earthworms, which is more likely.
As opposed to killing the earthworms, it somehow invigorates the earthworms and gets them to be totally crazy and have an insatiable appetite for human flesh.
Of course.
So I put this in the animal pet category because there is a lot of the film that focuses on the use of earthworms for fishing purposes and sort of the human worm symbiotic relationship. So I figured
I didn't know there was a human worm symbiotic relationship.
Sure.
It's like of course tapeworm maybe.
Of course there is.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes is not a huge fan of. I will say Rotten Tomatoes is not a super huge fan of Squirm. They gave it 36%, which ain't great. But there is some amazing. I will say amazing special effects in Worm, and in fact,
did they actually use real earthworms in it?
There are some scenes where I scratch my head. I wonder, how in the hell did you get a hold of that many worms? I mean, they have got, like, closets full of worms. They have entire ceilings breaking loose and what appears to be bathtubs full of earthworms are being dumped out of the ceiling. Uh-oh. And it's pretty incredible. Now,
you put a hot plate under those worms and they'll start moving around pretty quick, too. So it's probably...
But we're talking about not hundreds or thousands. We're talking about probably hundreds of thousands of worms, and I'm thinking, it's a lot of friggin' worms to get a hold of. But here's the thing that I think is great about the film. So, the Oscar-winning makeup artist, Rick Baker, this was one of the first films he was involved with. Yeah. And he went on to do tons of great stuff. American Werewolf in London. There's a couple scenes in, you could tell that this is where sort of Rick Baker was kind of cutting his chops. There's a scene fairly mundane scene involving, you know, some hillbillies out fishing. The one hillbilly, you know, starts to become affected by the worms that are trying to get out from his insides, and he kind of turns around in an almost like werewolf type move. He turns around, you see his face, and there's just worms coming all out of the insides of his face. And it's a pretty shocking, it's, even to this day, it's pretty shocking. And so I give Squirm two thumbs up because A, there was no friggin' CGI in this movie, and B, whoever the worm wrangler was that went out and acquired these thousands and thousands of pounds of worms did a really great job. The film itself, the acting's a little suspect, the story's a little suspect, but I think there was some good foundational elements to the Squirm, or I guess to Squirm.
Fun fact.
Fun fact.
My parents, in an attempt to make me an entrepreneurial genius, had me raise mealworms for the local fishermen. And so we actually had domesticated a big box of grubs. They were more like beetle larvae than real worms. But we had, you know, hundreds of worms in the garage that I would have to go feed. So yeah, you know, it's
worms are pretty domestic. Yeah. Fun fact too, apparently because the film was filmed Squirm was filmed in the southeast in Georgia, TBS, the Atlanta station, used to show it after Atlanta Braves baseball games late at night. And apparently the Atlanta Braves, they used to promote it all the time. They used to promote Squirm, and apparently the Braves announcer would always jokingly refer to the fact that, you know, following up on the Braves baseball game was going to be another showing of Squirm. And he apparently at one point challenged the viewers to watch it, and he sarcastically said that if you stayed up and watch it, he would send you a baseball. And apparently the next day they got like thousands and thousands of people that said, I stayed up and watched Squirm, give me my Atlanta Braves baseball.
Nice.
So, what do you got for your fearsome foursome,
number three
on the pets, animals go wild when good pets attack list?
Scariest moment with an animal, domesticated animal, or sort of a domesticated animal. This is from my favorite movie of all time.
Whoa.
It's The Thing.
Oh, sure.
So, it's a dog. It's not a dog. It's a dog thing. It's the opening scene of the movie. First time I saw it, it was like, why are they shooting that dog? Don't shoot the dog. And you know, the Norwegian who's desperately trying to kill the thing knows, it's like, too bad that the other people at the camp can't speak Norwegian, although they would have, you know, known better than to take that thing into the compound. But
what was,
you know,
the thing dog named?
I don't think it had a name.
Okay.
But the dog actor was named Jed.
Jed?
Jed the dog.
Jed the dog.
And he went on to play in The Journey of Natty Gann, and he was also in White Fang.
Oh,
there you go.
Good job,
puller.
Good job, Jed.
Yeah, and so not
solid
quite
career.
The
solid,
but he will be remembered for splitting apart like a banana,
right?
Because that's what he did in The Thing, and in the first close to wet in my pants moment horror movie of my entire life. It was a complete shocker. I was not ready to see, you know, because the dog's wandering around the camp, and it's like, They just sort of ignore it. It's like, hey, what's that dog doing here? Put the dog in the kennel. So they have Clark goes and puts the dog in the kennel, and then the dogs know better because they can sniff out an imposter amongst themselves, and you know, when it starts shivering and it turns into a spider thing, it was like, oh my god.
Do you think that was the scariest scene in the film? Do you think that was the scene that just pushed it over the top?
That was the go button.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there were some, there's four or five just lights out for a, you know, particularly for a 12-year-old
would you put the dog in the lights out category?
Yeah. I screamed. So
that works.
Right. And then, although I don't think
that qualifies.
In fact, that may have been the moment that I fled the room and hid in my buddy's computer room because I couldn't take it. I think they paused the video, dragged me out of the room, and we watched the remainder of the scene. So yeah, that's that. Because I remember seeing all the moments, but that was the one that I just wasn't ready for it. It's like, we heard it was going to be gross. I'd never seen anything like it. Right. So
yeah,
the closest thing was, I think, because I thought I was ready because I'd seen Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
So I was used to kind of some scary movies. Was not ready to see a Malamute just go Splitsville.
Different ball of wax. So yes, and I'll bet you could even see all those various scenes from The Thing on YouTube.
Yes.
If you typed Jed the dog, Malamute, Splitsville into YouTube, you would get all those scenes.
You're number three.
My number three on the Fearsome Foursome list, the tagline for this film is, it lives 50 feet beneath the city. It's 36 feet long.
Oh, it's alligator, isn't it?
It weighs 2,000 pounds, and it's about to break out. This is the 1980 horror film called Alligator, written by John Sayles.
Really?
It, of course, involves the actor Robert Forster, who went on to be in one of the greatest films of all time, Jackie Brown. And, in fact, Quentin Tarantino had said that he was so sold on the detective character that Robert Forster plays in Alligator that he knew always in the back of his mind that he was going to cast Robert Forster as Max Cherry in Jackie Brown, and he did. So the film is great, and this does involve a pet because it's the film is set in Chicago, even though I think it's all shot in Los Angeles, but it basically involves a police officer trying to track down this giant, ravenous, horrible alligator creature that was flushed down the toilet years earlier.
Urban legend
stuff. And, yeah, urban legend stuff, and has now decided to let loose on the citizens of Chicago. All you need to do is but watch the trailer for this film, and you will be sold. And, of course, the trailer culminates with a very hysterical-looking, Ray Harryhausen-esque alligator busting through a sidewalk.
There's been a Lake Placid's got, I think they had the alligator jumping up and grabbing a helicopter, which was an homage to Grizzly.
Which was an homage to Grizzly, and maybe even Alligator. So the interesting thing about Alligator, also another fascinating little tidbit about special effects and makeup artistry in this film. We had the Bryan Cranston. Bryan Cranston, yes, the actual Bryan Cranston was he was credited as a he was credited as a special effects assistant, and apparently he was in charge of making the alligator guts For the film's finale.
Oh, nice!
Yeah,
did you see what he make him out of? Was it like they didn't go for just like cow intestines? Go down. Come in here in Chicago. You might as well go to the butchery and.
Well, I think it was set in Chicago. I think it's all filmed in Los Angeles. Right. It's one of those where you can clearly see it looks.
Why
like
are there mountains in the background?
It looks like everything in the 1970s. It looks like MASH. They clearly shot it somewhere in the hills outside of Los Angeles.
Well, there's the thick brown haze that was LA of the 70s,
and the thick brown haze of LA in the 70s. But Alligator is actually a pretty fun movie. It's a pretty solid film. There's a couple great scenes where Robert Forster, of course, is trying to track down the alligator in the sewers, some kind of intense scenes that sort of give almost a kind of a pre-Aliens sort of vibe. You're trapped in a confined space. There's something hunting you down. You don't know exactly where to go, which tunnel to turn down. It's very
dark.
And
there's always just enough water in there.
And there's just always just enough water that you never quite know if alligator might be lurking below the surface.
Good one.
So Alligator. Alligator's a great film. Check it out.
All right.
Number two on your fears
number two,
foursome
now,
list.
I am at serious risk of bumping into you on this one because I think this is one of our favorite directors.
Uh-oh.
George Romero.
Uh-oh.
Monkey Shines.
Ding, 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 ding.
Did I catch
ding,
it?
Ding,
all right.
Ding, ding, ding. Right. We have a crossover.
Figured.
We have a crossover. How many do we decide?
I think this
eight,
is,
nine?
Yeah, this is our eighth crossover.
Eighth crossover.
Okay.
So you have to go back. In order to find all the times we've crossed over, you have to go back and listen to all 15.
Every single one of them, please.
All 15 episodes.
Yes.
And then you can discover for yourself those times in which we've crossed over.
I think it also is a little bit of not surprising when the notion of pets gone bad, you know, in animal horror movies, you got a smaller pool than, say, your ghost stories and your serial killer things.
This is true. But Monkey Shines is good.
Monkey Shines is fantastic. It's, it's a psychological drama. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who are not familiar with Monkey Shines, our protagonist, Alan, at the beginning of the movie, goes out for a run, kisses his girlfriend, and goes out for a jog, and actually sort of in a double bad animal moment, a German Shepherd scares him into the street where he gets hit by a car.
Boom.
Ammo. Yeah.
Quadriplegic.
Yep. and
quadriplegic,
and he becomes, and then his girlfriend ditches him for the doctor that does his surgery. So
it's an ugly scene.
That's that nefarious girlfriend and a duplicitous surgeon.
Yep.
Who, but he also has a buddy who's kind of, he's a total sketchy.
He's a scientist.
Mad scientist.
Who might be addicted to the drugs.
Right. And the drugs.
Of all types and sizes.
Generic all drugs.
All drugs.
And he's taking human brain fluid, like some sort of a cocktail, and injecting human DNA from brain stem stuff into a monkey's brain, trying to make the monkey smarter.
This is pre-Ronald Reagan fetal tissue being injected into his spinal column.
Yeah, so this is this whole thing, he keeps this on the down low, doesn't tell anybody he's doing this thing.
Because he's a mad scientist.
And he eventually decides that, you know what would be a really good thing, is I'm going to have this monkey be a trained monkey to help my buddy who's a quadriplegic. Turns out the monkey is actually very good at channeling emotions and reading minds.
Mm-hmm.
And
telekinetic monkey.
Yes, telekinetic monkey.
Brought to you by
it's telepathic monkey.
Telepathic monkey.
Telekinetic would be like the monkey's moving stuff.
I think he might do that at some point. Doesn't he move the razor blade?
He brandishes the razor blade.
He brandishes the razor blade, yes. He connects telepathically with Alan.
And Alan's got murder in his mind because he's totally pissed
courtesy
off.
Courtesy of the fetal tissue.
Yes. He doesn't, he wants, so monkey goes ape shit, pun intended, on the girlfriend and the doctor, and then, and manages this monkey, and it's an adorable little capuchin monkey. I mean, it's not a very scary animal until you see it in action, going out there, slicing people up, lighting them on fire. He kills a bird, right? He kills a bird and stuffs it in someone's shoe because the bird... But the bird had it coming because the bird was pecking at Alan's face. Right?
That's true.
And so, you know.
Yeah, you know, my complaint with Monkey Shines, I think a lot of people's complaint was, well, this was A, where the George Romero slide started, but B, mm-hmm. There was a whole hell of a lot of subplots in this film.
Yeah.
Even the parakeet was a subplot. The nurse was a subplot. Alan's girlfriend was a subplot. The physician was a subplot.
The physician's buddy and his
the buddy with the mad scientist was. There's a lot of subplots, and I think this could probably, even still today, I think if you gave it a tight edit and squished it down to 80 minutes, I think you'd have yourself a rockin' scary film. But yeah, too many subplots, George.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
But fun monkey.
Rest in peace. Great monkey. Great monkey actor, for sure.
You suspect that certainly he's no Black Phillip. He was a well trained monkey.
That was well trained. Good.
Actually, it was she.
Good. Oh, what?
Ella the monkey.
Ella the monkey. Whoever your animal wrangler was, they did a solid.
Yeah, she. I think the proper term for Ella is she was a homunculus.
Homunculus. Yes.
Yeah. So she was a little creature doing Alan's bidding, and Alan was a mad man.
He was indeed. He was indeed. Which be ultimately begat the telepathy, right? I think it wasn't that what they were trying to draw out?
Yeah.
Was that the monkey was drawing on Alan's anger.
Yes.
As a result of being quadriplegic. As a result of being scared by a German Shepherd.
And I think also weirdly for a Romero movie, this had a happy ending.
It did. That's right.
Yeah,
it did.
So I don't know that Alan deserved a happy ending after all of this, but we got one. He walked again. Spoiler alert.
Indeed. All right, well, that was my number two, so I'm going to go straight to number one on the Fearsome Foursome
list.
Top of
the charts.
Top of the charts. Tagline for this 1971 film is, "This is Willard and his friend Ben." Ben will do anything for Willard. Willard. It's a great film. I don't know
Did Michael Jackson do a song for this?
Ben.
Yeah.
And they did. There was a second film called. Prior to Crispin Glover getting involved in whenever that was 2003, mm-hmm. there was a second film called Ben involving Ben. This is a great film. I mean, it's a wonderful cast. It's got Bruce Davidson, who did a lot of really great films in the 70s. It's got Sandra Locke. It's got Ernest Borgnine. Ernie Borgnine. It's a great film. I don't know that Crispin Glover really improved on it, because I think it was a pretty solid film. I think Bruce Davison does. He does a great job as Willard.
Mm-hmm.
I think he does. He effectively takes this sort of sad, lonely person with lots of confidence issues. There's probably at least some implied sort of abuse, and a whole raft of psychological issues. Plays it really well at the point at which there's, you know, several cracking points, but the point at which he confronts Ernest Borgnine is a really great scene.
So does Borgnine play his father or boss. A mentor?
Boss. Okay. Yeah, right. Plays his boss. Yeah, and you know, he's incredibly as a boss. He's this tyrannical character who's incredibly abusive to Willard, and you know, Willard ultimately gets his comeuppance.
What makes Ben scary? Because there's a comeuppance involved, well, Ben, yeah?
No, it's not so much Ben. It's much like in the same way that Squirm has some scary moments, it's not a singular worm. It's, you know, the fact that there is this army of these
swarm
beasts.
Of rats.
It's a swarm of rats. It's like when you see one cat, you say to yourself, hey, that's one cat. But when you see 30 cats, you go, holy shit, that's 30 cats. That's really creepy. There shouldn't be 30 cats in the same place at once. 30 dogs, maybe. But even 30 dogs is pushing the boundaries of sort of sane behavior. And it's the same thing. You see one rat and you go, eh, that's one rat. That's kind of creepy. But you see 30 rats in a room. You see 30 rats in a closed in space or an enclosed space, and it starts to get really, really creepy.
I had actually a similar, you know, thought about the, you know, kids movie, mm-hmm. Ratatouille.
Sure.
Remy the rat, mm-hmm. kind of cute, kind of adorable. He helps the chef cook, but as soon as you see a horde of rats, he ain't so cute. It's like you just get a little bit. You get a little jittery, even if it is a, you know, Pixar film.
Anyway, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. All right.
Swarm of Rats.
So number, so my number one was Willard. 19, right. Not the Crispin Glover joint, but
the Bruce Davison one.
The Bruce Davison, 1971.
Can you joint? Can you sing a few lines from Ben?
Ben, no, I can't.
Bummer.
I do like Ben. It's okay. A good song.
So. In preparation for this,
yes,
I did a little bit of homework, and uh-oh.
You got a premise to yeah. your number one.
Yeah, a premise to my number
That's
one.
That's the first. Okay,
this is so. I'm going back to the farm, and the most docile, nicest animals on the planet,
sheep.
This is Black Sheep from 2006.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen it.
I have seen it.
It is a the Kiwis know how to do horror comedy from, you know, Peter Jackson and Dead Alive and to Taika Waititi and What We mm-hmm. Do in the Shadows. The Kiwis like their blood and guts with a real silly streak, and so Black Sheep fits the bill really well in that regard. It's a young man who's as a boy got tormented by his wicked older brother who kills a sheep, wears the bloody fleece and spooks the shit out of him, and so the younger brother leaves for Wellington so that he can get away from the farm because he's afraid of sheep now. But he comes back to the farm to sell off the remains of the rights to the property to his brother after mm-hmm. their father dies. And meanwhile, the brother has been experimenting, doing weird genetic mutations to the sheep to get a better sheep. And
Dolly, yeah, it ain't
right. Well, they actually, you know, the sheep that they, the prize sheep that they had, actually is a really good looking sheep. So good looking that the creepy older brother has actually relations with the sheep.
Dolly.
Yeah. but there's...
was it Dolly? Dolly was, am I mistaken? Dolly was the first genetically cloned sheep
right.
on the planet.
So I think that's where I think they took their cues from this. And, of course, in a lot of movies like this, you'll have the PETA,
right.
the hippie do-gooders who are totally incompetent. And they, in an attempt to try and expose the farm for the genetic malfeasance.
And they get theirs.
Yeah, well, they break in, they find, like, these jars of these mutant sheep fetuses, and the goofy dude who steals one of the canisters hoots and hollers and runs away and says, "Yeah, you can't catch me!" Trips, busts the bottle open, the sheep fetus lands on his shoulder, and damn near pulls his ear off. It is a really fantastically silly and gross move to see a sheep fetus pulling a man's ear off.
You don't
see that every day.
You don't see that every day, and you don't utter that sentence.
No.
That will be the last time on planet Earth you hear sheep fetus and ear in the same sentence.
Num. So, you know, so after this, the sheep fetus crawls away, finds the front, and is bleeding. Like a mama sheep comes to go check it out.
I can't remember. Do they explain why the sheep fetus parked in a jar of formaldehyde would somehow become reanimated instantly upon breaking out?
No, it's just crazy mutant sheep.
I couldn't remember.
I think part of this struck
by a lightning bolt or.
No, I think that they emphasize that the genetic testing that they're doing on these sheep keeps them alive. They're undead sheep.
Oh, okay, right.
Because you see this one sheep carcass that's like completely split open and the thing's still moving.
Okay, so maybe the formaldehyde just has like a numbing effect.
Yeah, or something. It's just it's bathwater.
All right,
but so the sheep fetus bites an adult sheep and then it's game on.
Yes,
and
did the black sheep have any sequels? That is not a research point.
I don't think so, because when I went on Netflix and it's not on Netflix right now, but I had to go to Google. But right. They had, it's just Black Sheep. The other thing is you get Chris Farley Black Sheep, totally
yes.
different movie.
Yes. So there's not like Black Sheep 2, The Sheepening, or Black Sheep 3.
But we do have, in a way that
Black
reminds
Sheep
you
versus
of.
Black Sheep Philip, Black Sheep 4.
Oh, that would be, that would be, Godzilla versus Mothra, right? You'd have
Black Sheep.
Black Philip versus Black Sheep.
Yes. I love it.
But it is that, when you see the horde of sheep coming over the ridge, they're still awfully adorable.
Right.
But then they make it into it's a really bloody movie. There's a lot of intestine pulling and some guy, it's like, not only do they have a sheep fetus pulling a guy's ear off, but they have a sheep pulling a guy's Johnson off. And that is like, you go, "Woo, man, that looks like it hurts." So, yeah.
And the last time you saw that was in the 2010 film Piranha.
Oh, yes. Yeah, but I think...
Where there's some Johnson pulling off.
Yeah, I think that was just more gnawing off. This one is like, you see, it was like Stretch Armstrong. Sure. It was pretty... it was rough. Anyways, so this is... It is, it gets a B- for acting.
Yeah.
But just for the raw, the commitment to the
but
to
an
the,
A
to
minus the for heart.
Yeah. It is a. It kind of reminds you
and
if Babe the Pig met Zombieland, right?
Okay.
It was a lot of fun. I have quite a bit of affection for Black Sheep.
Cool.
All right.
So we're switching things up tonight. We decided to start a new segment. Eric, you want to hip us to the new segment?
So we're switching away from
the dead undead,
which seemed to be more of
a
plus one. Yeah,
it was our plus one. We were cheating because there's so many great films. We couldn't really leave you with four. We had to like give you five, but then we also had to tell you one film to stay away from.
Right.
So we were trying to help you. Ultimately, it was a little self-serving,
right.
Even though we were trying to help you. But we decided it was too. It calibrated to too self-serving, so we've come up with a new idea, and that is
we're calling it grave digging.
The grave digging.
So this is
our discoveries for the week.
Yep, and this can range from from books to comics to posters.
Infographics. Yeah. Soundtracks, short films, movie reviews.
So this is sort of a potpourri of...
things we have discovered.
Grab bag, yeah. So
the grab bag. These are the things we have discovered over the course of the week, and we want to tell you about.
Yeah, so Mike, what do you got?
So I wandered across a film this week called... The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave, also 1971. I think every single film I've reviewed tonight or talked about tonight is from 1971.
Spoiler alert, that's a Mike Campbell trope right there.
It's a great film. It's like if the Italians got into a time-space portal and went into the future and they saw Austin Powers and they said, how do we take all the best elements from Austin Powers and all the best elements from Italian giallo and kind of mesh them together into a single film? It's not a funny movie, but it draws on many of the same sort of late 60s, early 70s sort of groovy European...
Mario Bava.
It's got the sights, the sounds, the set, the sound, the soundtrack, the fashion.
So is there dancing?
There is actually a little bit of dancing. Mm-hmm. There is some dancing. It's a fun movie, and it's actually a pretty solid movie. It basically involves a guy who gets out of the booby hatch, which is, I think that's what they call it now, the booby hatch.
I don't know. I've never heard that term before, but roll with it.
The nut house, the booby hatch. He gets out of the nut house and escapes from the nut house. He's been placed in the nut house because he's grieving over his recently deceased wife, Evelyn.
Okay.
And he, of course, has a penchant there on out for redheads. And instead of going out and just finding another redheaded woman to call his wife, he goes out and finds redheads and kills them.
Redheads. Okay.
And Evelyn was his redheaded wife. Lots of twists and turns. Turns out his creepy cousin Farley is the one that is kind of putting these horrible thoughts into his head, and Farley gets an acid bath at the end of the film and gets his comeuppance. But all along the way, great soundtrack, great set. You know, the thing that really struck me when I was watching the film was that, you know, the old architecture, the classical architecture, the neoclassical architecture, all the architecture in Europe, you know, that's taken place over the last thousand mm-hmm. years is really phenomenal, and it is really creepy. And you know, the fact that these guys have access to these wonderful, wonderful sets, castles, mm-hmm. morgues, mausoleums, etc., is, you know, it's a treasure trove for horror set design.
Sure.
Yeah. So The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave.
Check out Mike's review on our website,
scariestthings.com.
One T.
All right. So what is your, when you went grave digging this week, what did you find?
I'm going to go short film.
Oh, okay.
Film came out in 2016 called The Fisherman. And it's a kind of a bizarre mashup of things because it's a movie shot in Hong Kong, in Cantonese, so it comes off like a Hong Kong flick,
mm-hmm.
but it is a film by a Spaniard who, you know, so it's a Spanish production of a Hong Kong movie.
Okay.
And about a man who's an old fisherman who's seeing he fishes for squid but he's running up, the sea doesn't give like it used to, and so he hasn't had a big score in a while, and the boat owner has come back to, it's like, he wants to take the boat back, and he goes, no, I've still got it in me. I live for this fishing. And he eventually goes out for his one last big score, and he lands something that's not from this earth. And it is, I think it's a, unlike a lot of the short films, and there's some very good short films that rely on, like, I think Lights Out was a great one, turned off the lights, lights on, lights off.
Right,
simple,
right.
Simple tricks that you can do, just household tricks, and just make it spooky.
Right.
You know, doors opening and closing, and, you know, those footsteps that are sneaking up on you. Ghost films are so easy to do in short films. But this one actually had rolled out some impressive squid alien special effects that were done. It's like, note to Hollywood, you do. This was a four-person special effects outfit, and it looked like something that Marvel would have done. It was really cool. And
they didn't have Bryan Cranston or Rick Baker.
Right. So, yeah, or Rob Bottin or any of our favorites. But right. It's a real fun little short, and also you can find that on our website.
How when you say short, how short are we talking?
It's 14 minutes.
14 minutes is short.
Yeah.
That qualifies as short.
So and it condenses, the neat thing about short horror films is it really condenses everything to a single moment, right? It doesn't bother with too much exposition. It just gives you the moment and lets you deal with it.
Monkey Shines could have done with some condensing.
Editing, please.
A little bit of condensing.
Okay, so I guess that will do it for episode 16.
Sweet 16.
And
sweet 16.
We're going to close you out with actually another item that I managed to dig up this week.
Yes.
Fabulous taglines. This is from the 1983 movie The Lift. A shitty movie, but it has an awesome tagline.
And that is the shitty movie is not the tagline.
No.
You are about to watch a shitty movie. And it's not the tagline. That is not the tagline.
Probably death of the box office at that point. So the tagline, take the stairs. For God's sakes, take the stairs. It's a killer elevator.